This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Bill Gates, is perhaps the most powerful man in the computer industry. He's also estimated to be the first or second wealthiest person in America. His company, Microsoft, is the leader of the software industry. An estimated 80 to 90% of the world's personal computers use a Microsoft operating system. Microsoft's new operating system, Windows 95, received an unprecedented amount of attention last August when it first went on sale. Microsoft now has its own online network and is looking ahead to wallet computers, interactive television, and electronic financial transactions. The company has become so powerful, it has been investigated by the Federal Trade Commission and the anti-monopoly arm of the Justice Department. Bill Gates has a new book about the future of the information highway called The Road Ahead. Gates says we don't quite have an information highway yet. It's more like the Oregon Trail.
Some key things we're missing right now are the ability to send high-quality video and audio. And because of TV, people are very used to well-produced video. And so having that become an element that's commonplace is very important. Today, things are a little slow. And even for still images, you have to wait a long time. And everybody's seen the same thing. It's not adopted to your particular interest. So you click all over the place and often find things that are of no particular interest, and there's no security. People can send messages that look like they're for me, but they're not really for me. So lots of limitations, and it's only because of all the hundreds of companies that are working to get rid of those limitations that I can say that what we have today is a major step in the right direction.
What recently changed about the internet that brought it from an obscure place that not that many people used to something that's front and center in nearly everybody's mind now?
Well, a key point I talk about in the book is that things can reach a critical mass where you get enough people involved that then you get more people involved, which means that more people see it, so they get involved, and it's a positive feedback cycle. The internet is the latest example of that, even though the technology that underlies it has been around for 20 years. Now, the key factor here is that the cost of communications has come down. The switches, the optic fibers enable us now to get hooked up to this global network for a very reasonable price. And so it's to the point where every company feels they have to have a presence out there, and people are improving the way that they use the internet almost on a daily basis.
Microsoft's new operating system, Windows 95, comes with software that gets users onto Microsoft's own online and web browsing system. When and how did you come up with the idea of including that in the software, in the operating software?
Well, people today have a hard time getting connected up to the internet to get the sign up and the right codes and the right protocol stack. It's been fairly difficult. And so with Windows 95, a big goal was to make it easy to get onto the internet. Now, Microsoft Network is one way to do that, but we make it easy no matter what kind of connectivity you decide to work with. The TCP/IP built in. The internet browser comes with all the new machines. But we think there's even more we can do as we continue to carry Windows forward to make it super easy to reach out to the information that you care about.
But when did you come up with the idea of including that connectivity right into the operating system?
Oh, that was a plan from over 2 years ago, that one way to simplify getting on to networks was to make it so you could have a single-click access out to the Microsoft network.
Now, the criticism from a lot of users and from people who operate other online systems is that if you get Windows 95 with the Microsoft network built into it, it becomes very difficult to use any of the other online systems or any of the other web browsers.
Well, in fact, it's easier to use all of those services with Windows 95 than it has been with any other operating system. There's millions of people connecting up to other online services, and Windows 95 is a big step forward from them. So in no way do we block anything. In fact, the vast majority of all personal computers come with connection software, not only for the Microsoft network, but for all of our top competitors as well.
What I read is that there's software built into Windows 95 that nearly disables any other online system?
No, there was one piece of software where we renamed their file because they were using the driver in a way that was incompatible with other software. But it's a simple command to either update or reactivate that. And that's the kind of thing that is an inside industry kind of controversy. But there is no problem connecting up to any of those services.
Microsoft is so large and used by so many people that you have a lot of critics who say that you're taking unfair advantage of that position. In fact, some critics say that Microsoft is trying to position itself so it will be able to profit on nearly every financial transaction that occurs on the Internet.
Well, no one's going to get a fee from every financial transaction on the Internet. Whoever's saying that is just plain wrong, because our software is available without any kind of fee, as will be anybody who's competitive with us there. Microsoft is a tools company. We give people tools, and these tools succeed by word of mouth. You know, people tell their friends, hey, this is a great piece of software, you should get it. It's a very competitive business. The only complaints I know of are those that come from competitors who are there and actually doing very well as the industry grows quite a bit. You know, the challenge is for anyone in this industry to keep improving the products, because what customers expect changes so rapidly that if you sit on your laurels, you're going to be replaced within a couple of years.
I'm interested in how you got your start in computers. What was the very first computer that you had access to?
Well, when I was 13 and in high school, we didn't actually have a computer. We had a terminal that you could use a phone line to call out to. It was a huge multi-million-dollar General Electric computer that had the basic language. And so we got a small grant that we used up in a few weeks that let us play around with it. And it got us kind of addicted. So then we were trying to find ways of raising money to keep using the computer, even though compared to what we have today, it was really nothing at all.
Give us a year.
I was 1968 when I was first playing with computers.
Now, what was the first work that you did on the computer that really excited you and made you think, this is for me?
Well, even the first program I did, which was a trivial little tic-tac-toe program, gave me the sense that if I did things right, a computer would work the way I told it to. If I got things wrong, I could try something else out. So it was a challenge to see how far could we go with it. What was it good at? How did it compare to what people were good at? And how could it help find answers to problems? And of course, we've come a long ways, but it's still very much just a tool.
Your first computer job was with the company that made a PC kit for the general public. This was what, the Altair 8800 PC kit?
Yeah, that Microsoft got founded based on Paul Allen and I seeing what was going on with Kit Computers. And the first customer of this Kit Computer Company was out in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And we found out about them by seeing them on the cover of a popular electronic magazine. And so that's why we left school and started the company.
How old were you when you started Microsoft?
That was 20 years ago, so I was just 19 when we were getting going.
And what did you think your future would be? What did you think the business would become?
Well, we wrote down at that time that our vision was a computer on every desk and in every home. And we saw our role as gathering together the best software people we could find and creating an atmosphere where it'd be fun to build software products and making a contribution to that vision. And so pretty much everything we've done since then fits into the original charter.
And what were the first programs that you came up with that you thought would be the most important and you know, the most profitable too?
Well, Microsoft Basic was our very first product. These Kit computers, nobody could do anything with them because writing the machine language programs was just too hard. And so Basic made them accessible. It made them so they could write little games or calculation programs. And so that really spurred the early industry from 1975 to 79. Basic was the primary piece of software that everybody used.
Now, do you still create software, or are you more involved in the actual business end?
I spend the majority of my time with product groups talking about what features we should have and how the group should work together, giving them positive feedback or giving them a hard time about areas I think they should work in a more diligent way on. And so products are what I like. It's where I can make a unique contribution. But I don't actually get to write the computer code. So it's a different role than I had even 10 years ago when I could be very hands-on and actually doing the development myself.
And why aren't you doing that more hands-on work now?
Well, it's a more leveraged activity to, you know how the products fit together and coordinating so many smart people, making sure that the interfaces are consistent, the products work together, and that people understand the direction that we're trying to push everything in. That's the role of leadership, and so that's where I focus my time.
My guest is Bill Gates. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Bill Gates is my guest, the founder and head of Microsoft. He's written a new book, which is called The Road Ahead. What kind of feedback are you getting on your new operating system, Windows 95?
Well, it certainly has sold faster than any new software product. In fact, people buying a new personal computer will find it's on the vast majority of all those machines. And so as the new machines go out, as people upgrade their own machines, we're well over 10 million users of the product today, and that's kind of unprecedented. The big push, though, comes as the applications come out that take full advantage of that. Now, we had quite a few of those the day the operating system came out, but more and more come every month, and that just helps contribute to the momentum of Windows, which is very strong.
It strikes me that there's a couple of different conflicting ethics now associated with the computer world and with the internet. One ethic sees cyberspace as this new world, an almost utopian world, where people can communicate without time and space getting in the way, without money standing in the way once they have their hardware and software. The world of cyberspace, the world of the internet hasn't really been a for-profit world. Information is virtually free there right now. Then the other ethic is the business ethic of designing things for profit and trying to make as much profit as you can. You are primarily in the for-profit world and are doing quite well at it. I mean, you're the first or second most wealthy person in the world right now. Do you ever feel that your ethic is in conflict with this more utopian ethic of cyberspace?
I don't see any conflict there. When you have a new tool like the printing press or TV, it's going to be used for nonprofit, purely educational things, and it's going to be used for commercial activity. In the case of the printing press, you know, books, magazines, it's very inexpensive, but a lot of that people do need to get paid. And so you're going to have a balance. The distribution costs are so low on the internet to get up and put up your own page is very easy that you'll have more free information there than we've had in previous mediums. But the stuff that will be used heavily are things that get great talent around them and therefore attract advertisers or subscriptions so that it can be funded. And the dynamic of who can make money here is going to be fascinating to watch. Right now, everybody's jumping in without any idea what the business will really look like.
A lot of people in the world of cyberspace are worried about Microsoft becoming too big a power and possibly abusing that power.
It's hard for somebody who's a tool provider to shape in any way how these things get used. And we sell a word processing program, and people write whatever kind of document they want to write there. There are lots and lots of people who are coming up with those things. So even though it's a great business opportunity for us, we'll just have to be very smart about how users decide to take advantage of this and make sure that our plans get adopted. It's a world of fast-moving improvements, and no one's got a guaranteed position, even though Microsoft is starting from a good point.
You've been building a new home that is meant to be not only a great home, but also a showplace for the new technology and a testing ground, I believe, for it as well. Would you describe for us some of the innovations you're building into your home that you want to experiment with?
Well, I didn't really want to put anything about the home in the book, but a lot of people kept telling me it would seem strange, like I was holding back if I didn't have some of that in there. So I did share the little bit of what the layout is and a couple pictures and talk about a couple of things I'm doing that are very new. One is using these screens, very high quality screens, and letting you call up any kind of images or video there. So you can look at pictures of Russia, or you can look at a particular painter that you like, or look at Nobel Prize winners. Whatever you're fascinated by, you want to learn about, that can be called up and sequenced very easily.
Let me stop you for a second. Are the walls in your house virtually screens?
On a lot of walls, I have big screens, but there's no place where the walls are completely taken over by a screen. In the house in total, there's about 40 high-quality screen displays.
Okay, so we've got the screens. What else are you testing out with the new home?
The other thing that's notable is that as you move around in the house, instead of having to have a key or a security code or unlocking doors and things, if you just carry a little tag, then it knows to put the music on, bring up the pictures, the lights, the heat, the various things, even direct phone calls there. And so for people who are going to lots of parts of the house, the tag kind of personalizes things and makes that very easy.
So if I had stayed at your house once, your computer system would remember what my favorite records were, and to welcome me, it would play them again the next time I arrived?
That's right, or it might decide to give you a little variety and make sure that you didn't hear or see any of the same things the second time you came.
And so who's going to program it? Say it figures out what my taste in music is and it wants to surprise me with another good record that's similar but different. Who's going to be programming the computer about what the new music is?
We actually have Microsoft has a CD-ROM product out called Music Central that has this idea, if you like one song, it shows you others that you might like. And so that kind of information is going to be online on the internet. So as soon as we know a little bit about you, if you choose to share it, then we can start suggesting things that you might not have tried yet.
Bill Gates, you have a new book that's a little bit of a history of Microsoft, a little bit about you, a lot about the future of the information highway. It's called The Road Ahead. How did it feel to you to write a book? I mean, where do you see the role of books being in the future?
Well, a book that you read from front to back is best in paper form. We did put a few illustrations on it. We put in a CD-ROM.
That's right. There's a CD-ROM that comes with the book.
That's right. And it includes some video and some demonstrations. So it's a little more multimedia than most books. But certainly until computer screens improve dramatically, books will be read just like they are today. Now, a reference book is different. Something like the encyclopedia, already the electronic form is far, far more popular than the print form. And in fact, when I was growing up, I had to read the print encyclopedia. I envy kids that get to do it electronically.
So books are not obsolete in your world?
No, books are fantastic. Even if the screens get to be so high quality that it's as good as paper, you can just take a little tablet-like thing to bed with you or carry it around, the value of authorship, of good writing, is far more worthwhile in the era we're moving into than in the past. Whether you're publishing online or publishing in print, great authorship is what'll create value in the years ahead.
You know, Microsoft has such the edge in the industry now. There's actually been a couple of Justice Department anti-monopoly investigations. Do you think that those investigations have been justified, or do you think that the government really should be staying out?
Well, the government has stayed out. I think it was certainly valid for the Department of Justice to look into the software market. It's a very important market. It's one of the markets where the United States leads, and it's creating lots and lots of jobs. And so they should make sure it's working well. And in fact, It is incredibly competitive, and so there wasn't anything that they felt they had to change. It is kind of fascinating nowadays. People talk about Microsoft's success, but at the same time, they talk about the rate of change with the internet being so great that we could be replaced. And so I think people understand that we're going to have to earn our leadership in the years ahead, and that's certainly what we plan to do.
What are you worried about for your future?
Well, every company as it gets larger has a tendency to slow down, sometimes not hire the same great people it did in the early days. And Microsoft has moved well beyond where that often happens. But at 18,000 people, every day we've got to come in and say, what should we be doing better? What, you know, what are customers asking for? What's new in our research that we might be able to bring into the marketplace? And the internet gives us immense opportunities to do that, but there's lots of small companies working day and night whose business plans say that their success will be based on beating us out. And so that makes it fun, but a lot of it's keeping that sense of urgency, keeping those great people very motivated to do the best products.
Bill Gates is the co-founder and CEO of Microsoft, the computer software corporation. His new book is called The Road Ahead. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.